malfunctions in your electrical panel can lead to hazards like fire or power outages, leaving your home at risk. So leave it to the pros and Mr. Sparky.
8-8-8-8-8-Sparky.
Independently owned and operated. Licensed in the respective state or county.
Grand Canyon University, a Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering over 200 engaging programs online. GCU invests in high demand areas such as nursing, teaching, and the sciences. Students engage with faculty who become partners in your success. GCU's online students received over $100 million in scholarships in 2020. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you qualify for.
And welcome back to Success Made to Last Legend Show. I'm Rick Tocchini. This program is brought to you by Eber Jones Financial Advisors, along with Blue Dots Partners. And our very special guest today on Legends is Matthew St. Arnaud. He is the creative director and partner for Normal Studios. If you've never heard of them, you need to go to Normal Dot Studio today. And you're going to learn about the fact that these guys, in a team of 30-plus people, they fuse creativity and technology. They collaborate closely with artists and producers to deliver immersive experiences. And I think most of our listeners, Matthew, have probably done some form or version of the Van Gogh experience. There seems to be like two or three or four of them now in the United States. But we are fascinated by what Normal Studios does, and we're so glad to have you on the show today. Welcome. You bet. So I know you're representing your entire legendary group of creatives there, but let's talk about you. Tell us about yourself and where you're from originally, and how did you and your partners begin and start Normal Studios?
That's always a good and interesting question in my case, but it's often for a lot of people, it's always interesting where they're from. I actually started out wanting to be a chef. So I was studying for years, becoming a chef, cooking, eating food, all of this. And at one point, I saw a show. It was a symphony for printers. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Symphony for printers. Then I said to myself, I want to do sound design. This is amazing. I want to do things like this. This is too captivating. I need to try this. So I stopped everything within a week, ended up going to study sound design. When I got out of school, I worked at a festival, the same festival I went before that sparked my interest for sound design. And I met this guy who was doing projection. This was back in 1999, so not a lot of projectors around. We hadn't seen it much. And one, this guy was amazing, super fun, loved working with him. So he asked me, what do you want to do? So I said, projection. I shifted again. But that was my last shift. After that, we worked together for almost 10 years. We ended up starting doing theater and dance a lot in the beginning. Afterwards, starting doing a lot of TV production, live TV, a lot of that. Ended up at Cirque du Soleil and so on and so forth. And different types of events, entertainment, like anything goes. So we tried so many things that we ended up specializing in nothing, but specializing in everything at the same time. 5 years ago, we like to question ourselves all the time. What do we do? What do we want to do? Who we are? Why do we do all of this? We ended up having this epiphany saying, like, we're not a visual design company. We don't do scenography. Like, we don't do entertainment. We're a creative studio. Just like what we do, what we love most is having ideas and bringing them to reality. So since then, that's what we've been doing actively and consciously. We had been doing that for a decade subconsciously without really knowing what we were doing. We were doing things. Now we know where we want to find that spark, that idea that gets us excited, and to bring it into reality to people, to audience, so that they can enjoy it also.
Mm. It's almost as if you're writing the next chapter for Blue Ocean Strategy, where you're just creating something new and different, and your team are a bunch of futurists, we think. So how do you know when you're going to land on a great idea that's actually going to get some traction?
I think first and foremost, and it happened again today and yesterday, we had two meetings where there's an idea that sparked during a meeting or right before. I think it's when you personally, I think it's a multi-step process. You say, oh, you get excited about something. And then you talk to it about other people and they get excited and they start having new ideas from that idea. And they're like, okay, we're on to something. And at one point, you got a bunch of ideas and you say, okay, we need to narrow it down. Like I'd say step three is, okay, what's the essence of the idea and why are we doing this? And when you figure out, oh, I can really simply boil it down to a simple tag phrase or a few words, and it makes a lot of sense and still gets us excited, that's when we know we have something to get excited about. They're like, okay, this is a really good idea. We need to do this. And usually at that point, it's pretty easy if you connect with a partner or a client or just share the idea, not even pitch it, just share it. They get excited also and they say, okay, producers are going to say, okay, we need to finance this. We're going to find the money. We're going to find the partners. Okay, you guys work on this. Okay, and let's go. And it rolls out pretty quickly. I'd say the Beyond Van Gogh show and Monet, that's how it actually happened. Within a few weeks, we were creating these experiences and they were rolling out everywhere.
Yeah, and it's so ironic that we were in Van Gogh's backyard in France when all of this started to happen. And we went, what in the world is going on? And we were, you know, we're sitting there in the garden where he painted the olive trees.
Really?
And was in the hospital room where he imagined Starry, Starry Night. It's like, I'm sitting there going, hold it. I'm going to get to talk to the guys that actually conceived this. So it is as if you were in the mind of an artist and you must be driven by some secret sauce that makes you want to help the public that's consuming your artwork and your production to love it and be a part of it. So tell me a little bit about how you have conceived those ideas and have been so connected to us emotionally through the final product.
I think the initial spark for this, the Beyond Van Gogh exhibit was, honestly, the first meeting, like, I want to create something very personal. I don't want to meet Van Gogh. I want to meet Vincent. Like, who's Vincent? And we figured out later on, like, he's very relatable. He painted emotion, how he felt. He painted everyday life. And in a pandemic situation, we're very much in everyday life at home, and we need to appreciate the beauty around us. That was all instinct at first. But the first thought was, like, something very personal, like go on a journey, on an adventure, and try to meet Vincent somewhere in there and to reconnect. And also the other idea was like, let's take, this was the broader stroke of like we did Beyond Monet, and we're working on new ones also, is like everybody knows Starry Night. Everybody's seen it on a t-shirt, on a mug. Maybe some people saw the original painting, but when is the last time you actually took time and really look and connect with what he left us, what he tried to paint? So the idea with the Beyond series, because it's becoming a series, is taking something that's part of our worldwide culture, no matter the language you speak, like, you know, Starry Night, you know, some Claude Monet's work. And I can't talk about the new ones we're working on, but every their iconic imagery or art that are part of global culture, and taking this and offering people the time to just connect or reconnect or discover or rediscover this. Like, people are intelligent. They're going to connect. They're going to feel something. You like it, you don't like it. It's all good. It's just taking the time. And that's what art is all about. We just offered a different perspective. Soon after that, we realized, okay, well, we don't have the original artwork. Like, we're far off. Like, being in front of an original, there's an aura, there's something to it. Like, it's unique. Like, you cannot replace that. So that was a big challenge. And right after that, we're like, wow, okay, we don't have the original. We don't have to pay all the insurance. And we can do what museum cannot do. We're complementary. Let's offer a new perspective. And like, oh, let's go. I was saying, go beyond Van Gogh meeting Vincent. Let's go beyond the image. Go beyond the myth of the tortured artist. Let's go beyond the frame inside the paintings. Oh, you can't do that in a museum. You can't go inside of it. Okay, let's try to imagine it. What was around him as he was painting. He painted a portion of it. let's try to fill in the blanks just so where he was trying to get a grasp of mm-hmm. what he was feeling or trying to portray on the canvas. So that was the initial spark, but that really got us really excited. Oh, this is amazing. This is great. Oh, we had to do this. And we started talking about this idea with producers, and they got really excited. The people financing the project heard about it. We pitched it to them. They got really excited too. Oh, we need to do this. This is amazing. So it went very, very quickly. And a lot of the feedback we get from the general public, we get a lot of emails, or when we go there on openings and things like that, we get feedback from the people, and they all say the same thing. Thank you. I just took time. They don't know about all this narrative. We don't necessarily put it out. They say, oh, it was so worthwhile just taking the time, taking a break from everyday life and just enjoying something, reconnecting, going with my friends, but not talking to them because we're just together. Don't need to talk. We're just taking in the moment. So we got a lot of that. We even got a woman who said, I'm a professional painter. And with COVID, I couldn't paint for like a year now. I'm stuck. I went there, came back, started painting again. Thank you. You're like, wow. Okay. That's amazing. That's exactly why we're doing this for people. It's large scale. There's a lot of people, but everybody can feel and anybody can relate in some way to these images that are part of our global culture. It's just a matter of offering people a moment of their time and like in their day, just take a moment, come here, feel, do what you have to do. We're not going to script everything. We have our narrative. We have our ideas. There's a scenario behind all of this, but you make what you want of it and you just feel and connect and take your time. That's what it is.
Mm. What if I told you that you have moved into a new zone where you're going to be affecting culture in the way children learn because you have busted open this brand new paradigm of seeing and understanding and going inside the brain of genius?
Well, that's a nice phrase, but it's funny because the new subject we're working on with dealing with museum with a lot of facts, it's like interesting, but they're asking us to, can we flip this around? Usually we'd have a lot of information and panels and artifacts and stuff, but how can we flip it around to be accurate so that people still feel what we like, the amazement? They're on a journey, an adventure, and they're learning something also. But it doesn't need to be, they want to flip it around how you learn or how you understand things. It doesn't need to be literal and put out all the times. Often, just by hearing, you can say, oh, this person said this to the other person and this is what happened. Or you can just hear the dialogue, just hear them talking. And you say, oh, okay, this must have affected something. We're intelligent people. We don't need to spill everything out. We can, like, and my idea also is for people to become proactive. Like, oh, this is really interesting. I need to read up on this. Like, what's that all about? I think I got it. And then they go out. Same with Van Gogh or Monet that we did. If people that are museum shy, a lot of people feel, oh, museum aren't for me. They go to one of these experiences and they say afterwards, you know what? I'm going to go and check it out. Like even if, oh, there's a Van Gogh exhibit 3 years from now in their hometown. And they say, I'll go check it out. I think I know a bit. So I'll step beyond my fear and actually go and continue learning. And learning is not always about fact. It's about emotion. It's about growing. So it's all of that mixed together. So it's less traditional, but we were, again, this morning speaking and talking about this with this new project where we need to convince a very known group and shift everything around. But that's what they're asking us to do. They're a bit shy. They're not sure, can we do this? And they're questioning a lot, but we're accompanying them like, okay, we're gonna flip it around. We're going to offer a new perspective. People are going to learn. It's going to be factual. Everything's going to be accurate. We're just going to play with it. Like we're going to flip things around.
There you go.
And that's I think people do enjoy that because it's sometimes you want to be taken by the hand, sometimes not. And that's where you would have a traditional exhibit in a museum and an experience like we do. They go hand in hand. You like don't do one or the other. Do both, please. Like try both. You're going to see different perspective. And that's what art is all about. Offering a perspective on something, on the subject, on whatever it is. and and every point of view is unique and valid in its sense. And the more perspective you have, a better understanding of the subject you have.
You got it. We're talking with our special guest today on Legends, Matthew St. Arnaud of Normal Studios. We're going to cut to a commercial, but hey, Matthew, tell our listeners that that I know are going to be interested in talking to us. How do they contact your organization to learn more about how they may get involved with you guys?
Oh, that's pretty simple. You go to our website, normal.studio, and there's a quick link right at the bottom there that connects to all of us at the studio.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little pause here to thank one of our sponsors, Blue Dots Partners, along with Edward Jones. I'm so glad that we met Edward Jones and Serban Marasini. Edward Jones and their financial advisors like Serban have been with us for all of our life moments. Serban is always centered on us, where we are, and where we want to go. He was instrumental in helping us live around the world, building our media company, and nurturing us as a true partner into the next stage of our lives. You know, there's 19,000 financial advisors out there, 7 million clients in their company, but he treats us like we're the only one and the one that really matters. If you want to contact Serban today, you can contact him at Serban, period, Maracine, at edwardjones.com. You know, life is for living. Why don't you partner for all of it? Hey, we have known the team at Blue Dots Partners for going on a year now. We started with an interview on this very show of Dr. Philippe Boissieu, which led to reading his brilliant book, Aligning the Dots, and we have literally worn that book out. Dr. Boissieu was a direct report to Steve Jobs and started Apple.com, growing it from $1. Today, it does over $25 billion a year in sales. Dr. Boissieu wants to shift the paradigm and move the needle when it comes to growing your enterprise. He is the guy who wants to create the next big acceleration stage for your company. Would you like to work with him? The proprietary process starts with a business alignment score, and the questions that he asks, man, they're tough. We learned that aligning our business both internally and externally is a must for growth, and that a growth playbook needs to be crafted. Well, it became our guide to achieving growth within our own company. So if you lead or own a business that is over $10 million in sales like us, you're seeking to grow consistently ahead of competition. Well, if that's the case, then Blue Dots Partners are your partners in waiting, because as Dr. Boissieu says, there's only growth or death. So visit BlueDotsPartners.com today. That's BlueDotsPartners.com today. And also watch his great TV show, The Alignment Zone, on C-Suite TV. Remember, if you aren't willing to risk the unusual, you will have to settle for the ordinary.
It's Philippe Bellumard. And we're like, oh, let's start something together where you're on the technical end. Tell me what I can do creatively with all of this. I'm going to understand this, and you're going to know what I want to do creatively. So when you set up the gear and everything, you know what I want to do. So you're going to make sure that when I come with the content, it fits well together. And it's like 1 + 1 = 3. That was the idea. We're going to take a few projects a year, and that's what we're going to do. It started out right. The first year we did a few projects. It was really fun, intense, but very. We learned a lot. The second year we had our we hired a first employee just to help me out with creating visuals and all of that. The second year we were 12, and then it just started like this. We were in the beginning of the 30s. Everybody started having babies, families, but it was all like welcomed and appreciated in the sense that my idea at that point was like, I want to be replaceable. If I get sick, I love the work we do, but if I get sick, I want to be able to treat myself. I have children now. If they're sick, I want to be able to take care of them, or I want to know them, sure. You know? So we're all going to do like a big tag team, like, okay, you need help. Okay, tag, I'm going to take your place. That was the idea. And it still is the general feeling and culture at the studio. Collectivity is one of our four values. We have amazement, ingenuity also, and one that we call a dépassement, which is maybe surpass yourself, like surpassing yourself as a group, as an individual. That's part of who we are. So these are our four values, core values that we actually didn't find out. We had people working with us 6 months to pinpoint those for us. And we said, wow, okay, well, I think you're right. That's pretty much us, but that's not business oriented. It was very much culture oriented, how we wanted to live our lives at work together.
Becoming a magician takes thousands of hours, right, Ashley?
Oh, I'm not a magician. I'm a design specialist at the Container Store.
But you transform closets and pantries.
Well, I turn your most frustrating spaces into ones you love.
With a magic wand?
With Elfa, our customizable, adjustable, and affordable shelving and drawer system.
The amazing Ashley, making daily frustration disappear.
Just doing my job.
Hurry, you only have until February 13th to save 20% when you purchase $500 in Elfa. Get started with your free design at the Container Store today.
So, but it made total sense, and it still is the same kind of feeling where we want to help each other. People come, stay for a while, they leave, but we all still play baseball together. They always come by the studio, like we all stay friends. A lot of past employees that worked with us for several years, they still all, well, not necessarily now, but they still see each other and connect. Like there's a community built around, and often they come back for a project or something. It's very, I'd say we're like a big family, and it's evolving. We're growing older. There's younger generation. It goes from 20, 21 to, well, now it's 49 now. So that's the range, and people all there mixed up together. One big family for sure. And for sure we're evolving in terms, like I said, 5 years ago, we said, well, we're a creative studio, so it's creation, that's where we start, and everybody can do it. Everybody actually does it, even from the executive producer. He's probably the most creative one with budgets, or he has an angle at seeing a creative problem we might have or something that we're stuck with, and he's not part of the process, but he has ideas, and more often than not, like, solution comes from everywhere. So everybody's involved and encouraged to be involved in the creative process at some point. And it works really well. It's always really surprising and very gratifying when you see somebody saying, I want to try it out. Then they come in, they have a great idea. And then you see this spark when they see their idea for the first time with audience members. And they see the reaction, and you see in their eyes the reaction they have, like, oh my God, I had this idea. You built it. People are enjoying it. I'm doing this for the rest of my life. And I see it often. Like, I love seeing that. When you see, like, they say, okay, I just found what I am and what I do.
Do you know why you're on this show?
You wrote an email?
You and your team made the show because we think you have transcended from success to significance.
Wow. Okay.
And that you guys are so different with the currency of ideas and not the currency of the almighty dollar, that you are so successful that you've moved to this new zone because nobody can compete against your great ideas. That to us is legendary.
Wow. That's well said. You do know what our tagline is at the studio.
I think it's how do we craft legends?
Yeah, for at least 10 years, I was obsessed with finding why. Why do I do what I do? Why do we do as a group? Like, why do we do things? And we were looking over and over for a year and a half with professionals and all of that. And at one point when we were rebranding, we had this, we had written all of our texts and stuff in French, and we had an English writer, a translator, that would translate all of this. And he was writing pages, and he got really excited, and he called us up at one point saying, oh my God, you guys, we need to talk. I just wrote something. Like, you need to sit. Like, well, we gave you things to translate. Like, you're writing now? Okay. And he said, making life legendary. It's like, yeah, okay, that's really cool. And I think it's about a year later that somebody, a professional, helping us finding why do we do what we do. She said, well, after a day and a half of workshops with everybody and all, you already have it. You're making life legendary. What do you mean? Well, that's why you do things. You want to create these, make everybody's life legendary, not necessarily every day, but, and it translates well into what we do on a daily basis, where, like I said earlier, if somebody goes to one of our experiences and after that says, I want to read up more on this. I'm going to go to the museum, or I'm going to buy a book, whatever, watch a movie, a documentary. Then it's a part of their life story. Maybe in 10 years, they're going to say, oh, I remember when I went to see this. Oh, man, that sparked an interest in me that never had been there before. So for me, this, okay, we're part of your life. We just influence a little teeny bit, but we're connecting with everybody. So creating this connection. So you're using legends and all of this. I like that name. But it's truly what we try to do is just making life legendary. And it feels very grand, but it's very small little details that are really so gratifying and satisfying. Like the woman I said that said she started painting again after watching one of our experiences. I'm like, wow, okay, that's legendary. Wow, helping somebody like that's amazing, you know? So, yeah, I think that's why it's just a good the professional that helped us finding our why at the end saying, well, you already have it. She was good. It was there in our face for almost a year, and we did not know this is why we got up in the morning.
Now you know the answer to that existential question.
Yes, exactly.
And for all you people that lead companies that listen to this show, you should answer your own existential question too. Why do you exist? And be able to wake up in the morning and be excited about it. Okay, Mark, Matthew, I promised you we were going to ask you some unusual questions because this is a tradition. So bear with us on this one. Let's start with this. You were saying that you were studying sound. What is the one song that puts you in a good mood?
Oh, God. It changes all the... Okay, let me think. There's many, many, many songs when I listen to a lot of music. In a good mood. Oh, my God. Which one lately? In a cheerful mood or just in a mood where I feel a wellness?
Wellness.
I would say lately, strangely enough, because it's not necessarily the thing that's joyful, but anything that Neil Frams did, piano and all these recycled tapes and synths and whatever. Like I saw him live 3 years ago, last show I saw. It was absolutely amazing, but it just puts me in a state of calmness, openness. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just love these melodies. Feels like just created them out of thin air, recorded them, and then learned them afterward. That's how I feel. I don't think that's how he does it, but that's how it feels to me. There's a feeling of capturing the essence of the present moment, and he puts it in sound such in a graceful and melodic way that I think anything that he's done for me, it's like, oh, I want to calm down. I want to be in a good spot right now. I would put that on in headphones and just, even when in meetings, I'm not doing it now, but sometimes I put it really faint in the background, just a bit of music, no lyrics, just to get the mood right. So for I think 2-3 years with the pandemic, I've listened a lot to all of his work.
Oh, very good. What a nice compliment. You talked about a little bit about fear earlier. Mm-hmm. We always study fear here, and I would love to know what your relationship has been with fear since you co-founded Normal Studios, and how do you manage your relationship with it today?
I'd say what it taught me, especially since we started working as a group, very intense all the time. There's nicer moments. There's more intense moments. I think the first thing is about learning to, especially as a man, it's not something that society teaches us, but it's talking about it. So when you open up and you say, oh, I'm really afraid of this, I'm afraid of whatever it is, not being able to do something or to do it in time, to be good enough, whatever it is, look like a fool, whatever. When you talk about it, you're at the coffee machine or wherever, everybody says, oh, I'm the same. You're like, you're the same. Well, I thought you didn't have that. You look so confident and blah, blah, blah. And then you start relating. So I think fear, once you start talking about it, not necessarily sharing it, just sharing how you feel about it or what are your fear are, you realize that everybody has the same fear. So like, okay, so we're all afraid of the same thing. So can it happen? Will it happen? Well, there's somebody that understands it. So if ever that happens, I can talk to it. About it to this person or this person or this person. I think There's always going to be fear because fear drives us. It's part of how the human being is made up and survives. But I think if we talk more about it, you can get over it or become better friends with your fears, and then new fear comes up, or you need, you know, or you help others also. So there's a feeling of growth, and that you're actually evolving. Because the worst thing about fear is just being stuck and not moving for years and not doing anything about it. You can decide, I'm not going to go there, I'm going to go elsewhere. That's a decision. That's good. You can decide, I'm going to go beside it, on the left, on the right, on the top, like you, or head on. You just like, I'm just going to go and see what happens. Like it, and in the end, like I always said in the beginning, like, We don't do, like, we work a lot with Cirque du Soleil and things like that, and you see the people that program all the automation up and down with, or with the acrobats. They have lives at the push of a button. Like, they do it wrong. Like, they could injure or kill somebody, you know? Like, we won't kill anybody with images. Like, it's okay. We can miss a cue. We can not be as perfect as we want it to be. It's only a show. Like, it's like, at the end of the day, we're all alive. Everybody's happy. And it's a show. We can try again tomorrow, you know? So, but there's still a lot of fear of being able to be on par, to have a good idea, to be able to sustain this, this confidence that people, I think this is the biggest fear when people are like, they're confident. Oh, I want to work with you guys. We're going to create something amazing. And it's like, wow. And you get really excited. And at one point you're like, wow, I don't want to let down this person or this group of people. Like, wow, that's the biggest fear, I'd say, for me, letting down people. That's and even in our studio, like somebody that has problems evolving or doing project. It happened many times over the years. But when we find it, again, creative studio, finding the twist, the idea, saying, oh, this person is this role for 3 years. It's working really well. What if she do this now? And then everybody starts cheering, and now she's still there, and she's one of the leaders in the studio. Like, there's so many moments like this where you're afraid of letting people down. But if you talk about it, you finally understand that everybody is afraid of letting the others down. And for me, like working with the show directors or different people, you understand they have the same fear about me. So that's why they're zealous and they're confident in everything. They don't want to let me down, but I don't want to let them down. So if we talk about it, it's a non-issue. We can just talk about it. That's it.
That's the
relation. I was very fearful for quite a long time, kept everything to myself. And at one point just started talking around the coffee machine, figuring it out. Everybody has the same dilemmas, same issues. You just don't know.
They really do. Yeah. They really do. Thank you for sharing that. I think that provides great mentorship to our listening audience relative to how you managed it. Okay. I have just a couple other questions for you. And we've been studying if particular locations where one lives or creates inspires creativity. Mm-hmm. So I told you we'd been to France where Van Gogh lived and painted. We have followed Da Vinci, the polymath, every conceivable place he's ever been. We've done the same with the Beatles. Mm-hmm. We've been every single place and studied where they did that, where they practiced for 10,000 plus hours. And next is Archimedes going to Syracuse this summer. So we're very lucky to get to travel, but I'd love to know from your perspective, representing you and your team, is there a particular location that inspires creativity for you?
Well, I think any location can, for sure. Some are more prone to stimulate ideas. I think it's any place that stimulates an or many emotions for you. So it's very personal and it depends on where you're at. But if for Van Gogh going in France and seeing the wheat fields or seeing, say, painting the almond blossom, which is for me the most emotionally charged painting he's ever done, for me, like, you know the backstory to it, you're like, oh my God, this is absolutely amazing. For him, it he filled it up with emotion. So any place that makes you feel an emotion, good, bad, fear, happiness, wellness, whatever it is. A lot of people, like, I'm very inspired at night when it's really, really dark and I'm walking outside for some reason, not often now. There's a curfew right now in Quebec. But when it happens, or I was just in the woods in a cabin for during between Christmas and New Year's Eve, and I was just outside for 5 minutes and just hearing the wind, the birds, the snow, no leaves, just fresh air. Like, oh, this is amazing. Well, nothing creative happened there. I was on vacation, but I still had a bunch of ideas. But I think anywhere that stimulates emotion for somebody. So we might be three people in a space somewhere that I might feel very creative about, or being very stimulated, the two others not. And often the others stimulate a lot of emotion also. So it's about stirring up all these ideas. And, you know, emotions are the way our brain talks, like, and we're trying to translate with words, but it's going too fast up there. And it's too, there's not enough word to describe all the variations of how our brain talks through emotion. So when your brain starts talking, that's where you can get the ideas and get creative, or you should get creative. Try to express what your brain is trying to think, or what you're actually thinking yourself. But you have to find ways to translate that, even if it's a small amount of it that actually translates. You have to try it. So I think it's all about emotions in the end.
Very good. Final question for you, Matthew, is about storytelling. I want you to give advice to our listening audience and encourage them as storytellers to inspire and to create and be different. What advice would you give them today in general about building great stories?
For me, for myself, I mentioned it a bit earlier, it's to tell a story for yourself first and foremost that makes sense, that you connect to. It can be only for yourself, and you keep it in your journal, and that's fine. And if you want others to connect to, well, share it. Find a way to share it, maybe with a few friends at first. Listen to their input. If you want to cater to a larger audience, well, listen to what they're telling you. Like, oh, this character is not credible. I'm not getting this. Why this? Why that? And after that, it's just about sharing and letting others also help you build your story, in a sense. You can tell it to yourself, but if you work as a group and let others input and influence you, you might say, no, I'm not changing this, but this, okay, this is a good point. I think that you have to build it with multiple. It's possible that you come up with an idea and it's brilliant by yourself. You write everything. But I found that often I write something I'm really excited about, I like it, and just give it to a creative writer, a screenwriter, or anybody. Like, look at this. Can you rewrite it in your own words? And when they translate it, okay, there's a mixed emotions in there, and it evolves, and I take it back. Oh, this is really interesting, and we're building off of each other. So I think it's a sharing, and again, going, like, you wrote something, sometimes it can be very personal. Oh, is this good or bad? And you're afraid. Well, just share it with others, and you'll see it's going to be good or bad, but something's going to happen. So I'd say write stories for yourself, but let others also get involved in your storytelling, or what you want to say, to refine and to bonify it, to make it maybe a bit more universal. I don't know, but I just like sharing what I have. People throwing everything in the air, it falls back, and we're rebuilding. We start over, a bit like the Beatles did I always forget the album. They just cut the tape, try to snip it back together, and then voila, we have a song. And it sounds absolutely amazing.
That's exactly right. In summary of one of the highlights of today's show with Matthew is you're one of the kingpins of collaboration, and you've got this abundance mentality to say, I'm going to let my story out to the rest of the world, and we're going to build on it and make it the best story. And it's a collaboration. So everybody owns it, and therefore everybody, your audience that consumes it, will find a little piece of their heart in
that
story.
We hope so.
Yeah, it is amazing, and it is legendary. And thank you for being on today's show. What a great guest.
Thank you.
I'd love to have you on once a year.
Oh, we could do that.
Just
for
to
sure.
get an update
sure.
from you on. And the next time you're on, I want to know who you're working with on this new project, because I could probably give you 100 characters to go develop stories about around the world. And so your currency as ideas is endless.
Yes,
So yes. Congratulations to you and your team. Thanks
Thank you so much.
And give out your website one more time so our listeners can contact your team.
Yes, it's normal.studio. Pretty simple.
Very good. Thanks again. Thank you. We appreciate you being on. And thanks to our sponsors today, Edward Jones Financial Advisors, along with Blue Dots Partners. And as we always say, may you continue to move your life from ordinary to extraordinary every day.
Hi, I'm Dr. Andreas Michaelides, Chief Psychologist at Noom. But what's Noom and why does Noom need a Chief Psychologist? Noom is a weight loss program that works, with results that last, because we know that changing the way you eat starts with your mind. With Noom's proven psychology-backed tools, one-on-one coaching, and flexible plans that emphasize progress over perfection, you'll have the tools you need to change your relationship with food. So sign up at Noom.com now and lose the weight for good. That's Noom.com.
Progressive presents Forest Metaphors, about bundling your home and auto.
In sports, three goals is a hat trick. And when you bundle your home and auto with Progressive, you get a hat trick of great savings and round-the-clock protection. So you might be thinking, wait, that's two things. A hat trick is three. But in this metaphor, great savings counts as two goals, and so does round-the-clock protection. So it's like four goals, and that's more than three. It's basic math.
Forest Metaphors, presented by Progressive. Bundle and protect today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Discount not available in all states or situations.